when I see Beijing as an example, Beijing had very carefully planned the venues, and sustainability-wise, they tried making some effort in terms of, you know, creating venues which can be stripped down to a basic level should it require, and all those things, in sort of designing the whole system of neighborhood all the way to unit level. They successfully delivered some of those as well. But I think the spending versus outcome, when you look at and compare these three, Beijing, Tokyo, and London, then obviously London is going to look much more successful because of many reasons and carefully planned strategies before and after the Olympic that took place in 2012.
Well, if you are a sports fan, you'll enjoy this episode. Well, if you are a sustainability enthusiast and a sports fan like me, you'll enjoy it even more. Stay tuned for a fun conversation. Hello and a big warm welcome to the first episode of 2023. Hope you have great times ahead. Sorry for an unusual delay between episodes. First, it was holiday season and I was a bit unwell towards the end. But I was definitely working behind the scenes. The recording was a year-end one and also during the time of the FIFA World Cup that concluded in Qatar, which in itself was quite a spectacle. Tournaments like these are what gets the sports fan in me really excited. Team sports and big events like these are what I look forward to every single time. Having said that, the other side of me looks at the big picture about how these big events are put together. That's looking at the sustainability side of things. For example, Qatar, which hosted the World Cup recently, saw about 1 million people visit in 1 month's time, exclusively for the tournament. Well, to put that in perspective, the population of Qatar is about 3 million. So that puts about 1/4 to 1/3 additional burden for a short time. In order to sustain that, apart from the sporting infrastructure, additional infrastructure had to be built. So what happens to that now that the World Cup is over? In fact, the social side of sustainability will pose the big question of whether this was all worth it. Qatar as a country has about 90% immigrant population, so that is constantly revolving in a way. In fact, it saw about 13% growth in immigrant population just over the year. You would probably guess why. Well, it was all to do with building the infrastructure for the showpiece event. Well, now, obviously by working around this with a first principle approach, we are bound to ask the question, why did Qatar do this? Or why did it have to do this? Well, we obviously have references from the past, particularly China hosting the Beijing Olympics in 2008, and then the showpiece event of 2012 London Olympics. So, as is the tradition, we have a guest who has the credibility to discuss this topic and share first-hand experience of working in such large projects. So, who is our guest for today?
Hi, my name is Jitesh Brahmakshatriya. I head the cities consulting team for CBRE. I work here as senior director. I'm an architect by background and I lived and worked in many parts of the world before settling down in India over the last 5 years.
So Jitesh, for a long time I've been following your work, and every time a big sporting event happens, I kind of look up to you and we kind of have a discussion around that and talking about the sustainability aspect of it, because you're an expert when it comes to looking at sustainability for large infrastructure projects. You have worked in many projects, particularly the London Olympics and subsequent projects in a big way. So how did you get started with this sector? How did you get involved in large infrastructure projects?
That's been a journey, Girish. And when I started my career, my first project was quite sustainability driven in Hyderabad. And that actually driven me towards, you know, looking at sustainability as part of the design process. And when more and more I got involved with projects, I realized that actual impact happens at a larger scale. And that's where putting all the efforts could positively, you know, make some good contribution as a professional in the sustainability aspect. So yes, then focus shifted towards large master planning and infrastructure projects.
Hmm.
And luckily, as part of that process, London Olympics happened as one of the projects during that time.
So have you seen a shift from the time you started, a shift towards sustainability in large infrastructure projects from the time you started to today? Do you see a big shift in the space?
Certainly. I think over last two decades, I would say the industry has matured quite a lot around sustainable development.
Hmm.
When I started, I think it was more to do with solar panels and rainwater harvesting, and those all over the passive design and all were more of sustainability principles that people used to follow. It now has grown into the systems infrastructure, digital integration, circular economy. It has matured, you know, reverse logistics. Quite a lot of new things have come in, which then adds a lot more to a unit level basic sustainability principles that were in practice. Those were in practice somewhere around early 2000, right?
Correct. Now, when you talk about large infrastructure projects like Olympics, I mean, a big part of the entire project is the development phase, right? From a time when the country or the city wins the bid to host an event like the Olympics, or even for that matter, the World Cup, which concluded recently. I mean, there's a lot of development activities that go behind the scenes, right? From conceptualization to then delivery. So from your experience, you have been involved in the London Olympics. So what really goes behind the scenes before the country or the city actually gets awarded the project or the Olympics or any large event?
The bid approval happened when actually I started working my first job in UK around 2004, end of 2004. That time, the bid process was already getting evaluated. And London was awarded, I think, in 2005, if I'm not wrong, that 2012 happened. So it's a 7-year journey. And they must have not forecast the recession right in the middle of it as well. So a lot of things happen, a lot of dynamism around that, a lot of fluidic responses, if you like. But the commitment, I think that is the main thing, you know, not pulling out, not, you know, finding any shortcuts. I think that's what the journey is all about. And it what London did is involving number of architects, number of businesses, large, small, medium. So that actually gave exposure to every single person who is aspiring to work in sort of large-scale infrastructure projects or sustainability and design-related projects in and around London Olympics. So this was, I think, the commitment from the government and, of course, the whole process. You know, the government's also changed, you know, pre-recession and post-recession, but still the activity didn't slow down. And I think that shows the maturity and commitment towards large infrastructure projects, which we find sometimes hard in many other parts of the world, right? That was the main thing.
True. In fact, when London actually decided to bid for the project and actually conceptualize, I think they picked a part of London that was probably lacking compared to other parts of London. They picked up East London to kind of develop and kind of build the infrastructure around that. So that was a lot of planning that went into it. And as you rightly pointed out, no one could have expected or anticipated recession to come in between. In spite of all that, London, probably when looking back a decade later, has probably lived up to its expectations or delivered on the sustainability principles, right? So what's your view on how it has panned out since the decade, since the Olympics?
My recent visit, I about 4 years back, I visited this venues when I visited London. And It looks quite refreshing. I mean, a lot of new, it's a new community or regenerated community already in place. People are using the sports venues much frequently. The schools are, you know, using these areas. And I think this helps the next generation to build well in the sports arena, right? The trainers, the coaches who are ex-Olympians are part of this whole process. And I think this whole journey that now is unfolding as legacy of Olympic 2012 is quite positive in terms of, you know, the next generation coming up. And you can see now in the next or following Olympics, the scale of the wins and medals and all the things that we see from UK, it's going up and up, right? I think these venues help in terms of creating better sportsmen, right? Sportsperson out of the next generation. So that's there. The other thing which I felt was quite refreshing was this whole area is running on zero waste, is running on zero discharge, and they saved about, I was reading recently in a report, 400,000 tons of carbon dioxide waste management. And I think that's quite a significant milestone for a city. And London has always been ahead of the curve when it comes to sustainability. So this adds up to that standard that they're looking at, developing further net zero and other stuff. This contributes to that journey. So it's a very positive feeling to be on that side.
True. The positive knock-on effects of kind of creating the infrastructure for athletes to kind of train and perform better is definitely visible in the subsequent games. Britain has performed well and kept the momentum that it gained in 2012. The other effects, like creating more jobs during the recession, was also a big positive, right?
Yes. I mean, imagine right in the middle of recession, the building industry was the first one to hit. Lots of job losses. Right?
Correct.
And this not only managed to save hundreds of thousands of jobs in the construction industry, but also created more, roughly around 100,000 or more jobs around the same time where the building industry was struggling across the globe. I think one of the reasons why I feel the country like UK bounced back because they did not compromise on some of the large-scale infrastructure projects running at that time, be it HS2, be it London Olympics, be it some other large commitments that they made for, during that time. That's something I feel social impact, you know, social aspects. This is a very, very positive impact when you see jobs being saved at the time when everybody is very insecure about what's going to happen, right? And that's quite phenomenal. Mental health issues, you can imagine how much you prevent by providing for new and retaining the old jobs, right?
True. I mean, that's definitely a lot of positives. But generally, when we talk about large infrastructure projects, sporting infrastructure projects, the cost factor definitely is something that that comes to top of everyone's mind when you look at such big projects. Because recently, the FIFA World Cup just got over, and the amount of money Qatar spent to get it going is phenomenal. It's one of the biggest money spending events. But in terms of money, did London kind of deliver on that? Or how should we generally pursue the investment that's made into large infrastructure projects like these?
Yeah, I think when we look at this kind of project, right, first is the assumption of how much you're going to spend, right, to what actually you end up spending. And if you look at all the Olympic projects, you will notice that the prediction of how much a city wanted to spend or a country wanted to spend versus what they ended up spending, there's a huge difference. They're like 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, and London is no exception, right?
Correct.
They ended up spending a lot compared to what it was originally planned for. And but when you look at the overall, you know, 10 years down the line, they made up the whole investment as well, just about maybe break even or more now. But certainly, it takes time. I would say, you know, a large infrastructure projects where you're spending $10 billion or more in terms of US dollars, that will definitely going to take at least a decade or more to find somewhere, you know, in the middle, 10 years, 15 years down the line, you might probably see the positives in terms of economic gain. Right. So, yeah, it's a very large commitment when it comes to the investment part, when it comes to the spending part. And no events are exempted from that. No large infrastructure projects are exempted from that. And I think, be it sports or any other large infrastructure projects, it is bound to take some time to recover what's spent in the large infrastructure project. Yeah.
Fair. Because I think a large chunk of the investment goes into public infrastructure. Like, say, for example, in Qatar, a large part was building the public transportation systems like the metro lines and extension of the airports and things like that. So, valid point that it takes decade plus to kind of recover the cost or break even in true sense. Now, coming back to the sustainability aspect. So, London was a benchmark in 2012, subsequently then 2016, 2020. Tokyo Olympics was also built to be the next big thing in kind of the sustainability aspect. And of course, 2022 Qatar World Cup was supposed to be the first net zero event. So how has the perception around all these changed ever since 2012?
More I see it, more, you know, at least an attempt is being made, right? In the name of publicity, in the name of marketing, whatever we call it. But people are making attempt, and some are more serious about that attempt. Some are more looking it from marketing and tourism point of view. But at least the attempt is being made, right? I mean, that's positive outcome. Tokyo one, I feel had a positive of using the same venues they built in the previous Olympic that happened in Japan, right?
Correct.
So a lot of these venues were recycled and made to suit to the new events and new standards, etc. And which actually is a circular design approach, right? You're not discarding the infrastructure and starting from scratch. That is a positive of sustainability side, right? But if you look at Tokyo, I think again a very unique situation happened in the pandemic. Tourists couldn't visit it. So it has more financial burden compared to what London faced, right? It's very hard to compare.
Correct.
So whatever they are going to live up to, I think they might need more time to recover the investment. They might need more time to showcase the advantage, because there wasn't much of the visitor footfall to, you know, generate enough waste or energy from waste or zero waste, and all those strategies that they were talking about could have limited impact with a limited number of people visiting, right? These also need a scale of economy to work with it. And I think that was lacking because of the pandemic. I think that's where I would say Tokyo probably will take some time to, look at the overall positive outcome, which London could realize in sort of in 5 to 6 years time, or immediately as well, when we talk about job creation, etc., etc. Tokyo will take a little bit of more time, right?
You did mention briefly about Beijing. So,
yeah, I think Beijing, what, when I see Beijing as an example, Beijing had very carefully planned the venues and legacy around that. So if you look at the China part now, right, their entire Olympic gymnasts or sports people or athletes or whatever we call it in different parts of the, you know, world, they are getting trained progressively in these venues, and the schools are a sort of attached to all these venues. they have a large tourism industry. I think now, probably because of the COVID and all, they might be facing some challenge. But their venues were also open for international events, as et cetera, right? So I think that that also creates a lot of cash flow for them. Sustainability-wise, they tried making some effort in terms of, you know, creating venues which can be stripped down to basic level, should it require, and all those things, in sort of designing the whole sort of system of neighborhood all the way to unit level. They successfully delivered some of those as well. But I think the spending versus outcome, when you look at and compare these three, Beijing, Tokyo, and London, then obviously London is going to look much more successful because of many reasons and carefully planned strategies before and after the Olympic that took place in 2012.
That is correct. You didn't mention about Beijing, but are there any other examples that are on top of your mind when you look at sustainability in sporting infrastructure projects?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about Qatar, and I was about to mention that as well. When we look at Gulf countries, specifically talking about net zero and investing time and energy in that, that's a very positive sign for entire world, right? Where there is no restriction of gas and oil and all at this stage, of course, but still they are thinking of net zero, net positive environment. That is something I feel was a step forward when we talk about Qatar, right? And that will set a good benchmark for many other sporting events that may take place now till, you know, India is also talking about Olympic bidding and all. I think this sets a good benchmark for everybody else in the world that you don't need to be London or Barcelona to be sustainable. Any part of the world can contribute to that if we plan well, if we design well, and if we plan before as well as the after events, right? And I think this sets a good framework, right? So good message around being sustainable when it comes to large sports infrastructure projects.
Well, you didn't mention about India. So finally, I have to ask you this question. India back home is kind of has always been thinking about bidding for projects. The 2010 Commonwealth Games was a big event in India, and a large part of the investment has gone into that, and especially creating the infrastructure in Delhi. So India, of course, has not hosted an Olympic event. What should a country like India do at this point to kind of plan, prepare in submitting the bid, which is a big part, and how should it kind of, from an expert like you, from an expert's view, so what would you say, like, should be the things that India should do from right from now to like few years down the line when I think it plans to submit bid for an Olympics?
It's a big country, right? So first of all, they need to figure out where exactly the events would need to take place. Otherwise, it will be like overall very confusing and very complicated for all the sportsmen, right? Sports people, sports, and of course the other staff or tourists visiting for that.
Correct.
So first is figuring out where exactly these events should take place. Second is how then do the gap analysis. So first you define where you want to do it, then you do a proper gap analysis in terms of where we stand in terms of the city's infrastructure, in general infrastructure terms, and in sports infrastructure terms. And then once that gap analysis is done, then chalk out how much time it is going to take to achieve a minimum threshold that we need to achieve in terms of meeting the global expectations, right, of certain levels, certain sort of security or sustainability or other drivers that Olympics would be looking at as well, right? After that, plan to, you know, empanel, like how London did. They empaneled consultants much before, then started distributing the work in parallel with a proper program management structure in place. And then while the whole process was going on, the legacy plan was also getting prepared before 2012. Actually, before the Olympics started, the legacy plan was also in place for what will happen to all these after the Olympics.
Fair.
So this is the whole process that I think India would probably need to follow. And in that, be fair, be transparent, and look at the right kind of consultants, look at the right kind of principles in evolving this whole process, right? I think that would be the key thing in order to successfully deliver an Olympic. It's a process of 15 years, 7 years before, 7 years after.
Well, fair. And that's a valid point that you mentioned about having the legacy plan in place, because sustainability, the true cost, recovering the true cost of breaking even after a big investment is made, is actually what happens after the event is over. Like, for example, even in Qatar, a large part of the stadiums are being taken down and they have been put into different use cases, like, for example, a university. And one stadium, in fact, is kind of dismantled totally, and they are going to send it out to a few other countries. So they had a legacy plan. So a small nation also managed to pull off a big event like this. So as you rightly said, identifying the place and then building the infrastructure with a legacy plan kind of makes perfect sense. So that's a wonderful note. So Jitesh, thanks for taking time to join me on the podcast. It was a wonderful chat with you, and having followed your work, and kind of know that you were the right person to have this discussion around sustainability in large sporting projects. So thanks for taking time to join me on the show today.
Thank you, Girish. My pleasure, and thanks for inviting me. Thank you very much.
Well, that was a wrap on the feature segment of this episode. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did recording it. The link to follow Jitesh will be in the show notes of this episode. You will find some interesting posts on architecture, green buildings, and some artworks too. Do check them out. Talking of artworks, I should thank Terra Generation, who are behind the beautiful artworks you see on every episode. They share wonderful stories on climate, biodiversity, and sustainability. You should also take a few minutes to check their work at terrageneration.com. Well, now finally, to wrap up the conversation around Qatar hosting the World Cup. Well, sometimes I feel it could be sports washing too, which is increasingly turning to be the new greenwashing. Well, we will not deviate into greenwashing on this episode, but I will leave you with links to another podcast episode. Freakonomics Radio featured this story in 2022, and you should check it out when you have time. And finally, I hope you have great times ahead. A new episode will be coming up in 2 weeks from now. So until then, this is Girish Shivakumar signing off, and as always, thank you for listening.